the Science Show on RN, where Lynn Malcolm from the All in the Mind had a program on creativity in August, in which we heard this about really creative people.
I know a large number of the artists and scientists in the new study taught themselves to read before they ever went to school. Another aspect is persistence. They're energetic. They work long, long hours. Another trait that I find very interesting is that many of them are people with knowledge in more than one domain. So the stereotype that one group is artists and one group is scientists doesn't really hold, because a lot of the scientists have interest in the arts and do artistic things. And some of the artists have interest in the sciences. So it's not so simple that the world is divided into arts and sciences. And to me, that has an important message for education, because we tend to mainstream kids in one or the other, and we shouldn't be doing that.
So what are your greatest hopes for the research that you're doing at the moment, and how it might help foster more creativity in our society?
One of the big messages is, let's not encourage kids to specialize as we tend to do, both parents and the school system. Given that so many of these people are polymaths, I mean, if you can see relationships in literature and have the joy of literature, that does feed into your ability to be a scientist, in that you have the joy of seeing things nobody else can think of. One of the subjects in my study, who's a scientist, when we were at the end, said, there's one more thing I want to say. He said, but you have to turn off that microphone. And then he said, you know, doing good science is like having good sex. It just makes you feel wonderful all over. It's such a pleasure to do good science, to have a good idea. And the cute thing is that here's this extremely nice, slightly nerdy scientist who did not want my secretary to transcribe that, because he would be embarrassed if she heard what he had to say.
But he was expressing that real pleasure in the creativity.
Yes, exactly. People say over and over, especially the scientists, that it's fun. It's really fun to be able to go into these uncharted territories and be an explorer and find something new. And we can't lose that. If we want to encourage creativity, we have to encourage that.
Nancy Andreasen is the Andrew H. Woods Chair of Psychiatry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine.
Well, Professor Herbert Hub from Cambridge, involved in creativity, what did you think of Nancy's points?
Well, some of them were correct, and I applaud her talking about education and looking at children. I agree with her that it's extremely exciting to do science, but I disagree totally that it's like sex. And the reason I disagree is that sex, I believe, from my very limited experience, is only enjoyable if there are two people who are involved and each person is thinking of the other. Sex by oneself, not that I know about that at all, is not fun. Where science by oneself, sitting in a room and making a discovery and there's no one else maybe in the house, that can be very, very exciting. And I've had a number of times where I've suddenly realized something and made a great step forward.
However, especially in physics, your field, the trend more and more is to have very big teams. So it's, if you like, group research.
It is true that the number of people involved is getting larger and larger. And I'm just about to conduct a survey in the journal of which I was the editor, how the number of people on papers has changed. The numbers is without a doubt increasing. It's again not like group sex. I have no experience in that whatsoever. But even in a big group, you can have ideas by yourself sitting at home and then come and say to the group, look, I thought we might make such and such a measurement, or the boson could be found in this particular way. But in my opinion, it is a pity, it's the way of the world now, that more and more people are getting involved and there are bigger and bigger groups, as you say.
We're learning more and more about Herbert Huppert as we speak, but specifically, why are you involved now in looking in terms of research at creativity?
Well, Marty Seligman, arguably the best known psychologist in the world, set up an Imagination Institute a few years ago and got some money from the Templeton Foundation to run 16 courses on creativity and imagination. He'd already ran one over 2 or 3 days with the experts in the field in psychology, in education. And he asked me if I would run actually the only one outside of America in physics. So I got together a team of about 8 people. 2 of them had been nominated for the Nobel Prize. And we had people from America. And we spent 2 days thinking really carefully about creativity and imagination and what it meant.
Well, of course, Marty Seligman is very well known for his books on fulfillment, happiness, and that kind of realization of achievement, reaching a goal and feeling great about it, is something that really often is talked about in science. But is there really a point when you're doing your research, when you get that eureka moment, does that occur often enough to be the fulfillment that you actually reach?
That, of course, varies from one person to another. There must be scientists who are unhappy even on the day that they have their best idea of their lives. And then there are many scientists who get an enormous amount of pleasure, as I do, when I suddenly realize something.
So what did your 8 people say?
Oh, well, the 8 people had many different things to say. For example, that some people get a good idea in seconds. Some have spent years working, and the eureka moment is not really a moment, it's the consequence of many years of work. I disagreed with the statement earlier that good scientific results come from hard work. Sometimes it's just an imaginative insight. Some scientists are extremely knowledgeable about the field and they see how to manipulate some new idea. Some are not at all knowledgeable. I have a colleague who's extremely capable. He doesn't read papers. He just can't be bothered.
Isn't that interesting? Because I was going to mention he's died recently, Harry Kroto, who was often rather embarrassed because he got his Nobel Prize for thinking about various molecules in space and buckyball stuff that just came to him casually. He didn't even bother much, and bingo, he's got a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, no, it is interesting. Well, a continuation of that is, in my opinion, the best Australian scientist ever, Lord Florey, used to say, you either read them or write them. On the whole, I prefer to write them. And I don't think he read very much, but he was very insightful and very creative.
Well, of course, the whole point of this is to work out what kind of atmosphere you would like your research teams to work in. Without being terribly prescriptive, I happen to know of a couple of places, the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, and the Perimeter Institute, which is actually in Canada, in Waterloo, in Canada, where it's unbelievably loose. You just don't have departments and you've got people wandering around. They're all very clever. And the characteristic is that you have corridors, and along the corridors you've got armchairs and whiteboards, and you might bump into someone who says, hey, I've just thought of something, you know, as I was having a pee in the loo just there. Do you want to talk about it? And then you fiddle around on the whiteboard. And that kind of informality is said to be twice as productive as the rather more rigid kind. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. I think you've put your finger on a very good point, that being relaxed and feeling free is very good. The 8 of us all had different backgrounds when we did our best research. For me, it's actually in the shower. I'm relaxed and I tend to take rather long showers. And
you must be therefore very creative.
Well, in fact, I might say that what really annoyed me is when I became the director of the Institute of Theoretical Geophysics in Cambridge, I realized after a while that I was spending a lot of time in the shower thinking of administrative matters. And that really annoyed me. And I decided, no, I want to think about scientific matters. But we all had different ways of thinking, all relaxed. Some said on the beach, some said cycling, some said just walking. What we all said, and I think this is an important point, everybody around the table and everybody I've ever asked has said that somewhere in their schooling, there was a mentor, a really capable, enthusiastic, helpful mentor, not necessarily a good scientist or good mathematician. In my own case, it was a school teacher who wasn't particularly good at mathematics, but he was fabulous at making us excited and interesting. And he did a lot for a number of us in mathematics. So this question of having a mentor, both at school and at university, is something that I think is very important.
We all need mentors, don't we? Not just screens, Professor Herbert Hubbard from King's Cambridge and the University of New South Wales.